T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. 5 DFW locations with North Frisco, Eldorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
On the line, we have Texas Rangers icon Rafael Palmeiro. Sir, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
I think we're good. We're very good. It's a Friday. Can't complain. The first thing I wanted to ask you about, because we talked about this earlier in the show, are you interested, or what is your interest level in the long gone summer 30 for 30? Because obviously you were playing during that time. What's your interest level in that?
Wait, what is that again? Say
that again. The Sammy Sosa Mark McGwire documentary. You might have heard of it.
Actually, I haven't seen it.
It's going to be on Sunday. Does that hold any interest for you? Maybe not.
Oh, no, definitely does. Yeah, I mean, that was a summer that everyone was paying attention. Even the players that were not playing in those games that they were playing in, we were following that stuff. And I remember that we would have, when one of them would hit a home run, they would put it on the big screen wherever we were playing. So, yeah, it was. I think those two guys had a lot to do with where the game is today.
So, Rafi, you're drafted by the Chicago Cubs out of Mississippi State in the first round, and the Rangers just took a first-round pick out of Mississippi State. You're drafted in the 8th round out of high school. I was wondering how tough of a decision was it? Was it not a tough decision? And then how much did going to Mississippi State help you develop your game?
Well, it wasn't really a tough decision for myself. My dad thought that I wasn't ready to go play professional baseball. And so he thought that going to college and having that experience for 3 or 4 years would give me a better chance to be prepared for the next level. So I thought that was probably, those 3 years at Mississippi State were probably the most influential and the where I made the biggest strides in my career. So, yeah, unless you're a first-round draft pick or maybe a second-round draft pick, I would recommend any high school player to go to college. That's a great experience, especially these days where traveling is a lot easier. You know, all these ballparks are incredible ballparks, and they really take care of these guys. So, yeah, I think go on and get an education and go play college ball.
Now, Rafi, you weren't in the minor leagues long, as you're drafted in 85 and then you're in the big leagues in 86. But I wanted to talk about one of your teammates. Did you know Greg Maddux was going to be close to as great as he became? Because you played, I think, a little in the minor leagues with him. And then in 87, you guys were both in the major leagues together with the Cubs.
Yeah, we played together in A-ball in Peoria for a little while. And he was a good pitcher. I mean, he was a high draft pick and, you know, just, but nothing spectacular. You know, I'd seen guys in college and even in high school, you know, I faced guys like Dwight Gooden in high school. So I had already seen guys that were, you know, Roger Clemens, Schiraldi. So I had faced guys that were much better than Greg Maddux was. But the thing that set him apart was he was so driven. He was so focused and just such a competitor. He hated to lose. He hated to get beat. And that's what I think drove him. And then he just, you know, learned how to pitch. He didn't have to, strike everybody out. He figured that he could pitch to contact and, you know, kind of flirt around the corners. And he had a lot of success doing that.
Is that something you can immediately see in the locker room or learn quickly? Who has that, like, unstoppable desire to not lose?
Oh yeah, you can see it. You know, you can see it in guys, you know, especially pitchers, you know, guys like Kevin Brown, Kenny Rogers that I played with. Not that I would support this, but they would come in and after getting beat or getting taken out of a game, they would destroy the locker room. And they were so upset about getting beat that it just made him so much better going out the next time and trying to get better from it. So, yeah, you can see it. And other guys just go about business like nothing happened. And that's why I think in a lot of cases, great players become great because of that.
Well, Rafi, the business of baseball is trading players, and I wanted to know in 1988, you make the All-Star team for the Chicago Cubs, and then you get traded to the Texas Rangers. Give us your thoughts on either excitement, disappointment, the feeling of, for the first time in your life, making an All-Star team and then pretty quickly getting traded away.
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed. You know, I couldn't understand why they did it. Like you said, I was coming off an All-Star season. I think I was second in the league in batting, and I think Tony Gwynn beat me out that year. So I really couldn't understand it. I mean, I was a young player. I'd just been drafted a few years before by the Cubs. So I felt that they were committed to me in a long career with the Cubs. But, of course, you know, I didn't understand it. So I wasn't very happy with it. But I think looking back on it, it was probably the best move in my career being traded down here, because it kind of opened my eyes to tailoring my game. You know, I think the Cubs drafted me because I was a hitter. I was a productive hitter in college. I was a productive hitter in the minor leagues, and I, you know, drove in a lot of runs, and I was able to hit home runs. And I got away from that when I got up to the big leagues. And so I think when I came down here, you know, the batting coach, the hitting coach that was here, kind of helped me with starting to get back to my base, you know, using my lower half better, and, you know, maybe even pulling the ball a little bit more than I was when I was in Chicago. So, yeah, I think that's what I think turned my career around, was that trade.
And you come to the Rangers at a time when, like, obviously they're bringing in a whole bunch of other young kids as well, because you're talking, you know, around the time of Juan, Pudge, Dean Palmer. Does that help your excitement when you're like, oh, my goodness, okay, we got a whole bunch of young studs coming in here. This could be good.
Well, it helped that they could all play. They were all great players coming out of the minor leagues. And so we had a great offensive team that could put up a lot of runs, but we couldn't outslug teams. I mean, we had decent pitching, but we had a lot of high-scoring games. And, you know, usually you're not going to win with offense. You're going to have to be able to pitch, and we weren't very good on defense. But, yeah, playing with – you know, Pudge came up later on because I was traded here in 88. So I think he came around like in 92. I think one came around like in 90 or 91. We had Ruben Sierra.
Yeah.
Who was there. You know, we had Nolan, Dean Palmer came in later on as well. So, yeah, we had some great players. And then Julio Franco, and then Nolan Ryan came in at the same time that we did. So, yeah, we had some really good players.
And I wanted to ask you about the name you just mentioned when we were talking about pitchers earlier. What was it like playing alongside Nolan Ryan, and did he also have any of those angry outbursts in the locker room after a tough game?
No, he just took it out on the opposing team.
Right.
So he would, yeah, I mean, he was even keel, you know, didn't say much, but he worked really hard. He was always in the weight room. He was always running. He was always throwing. And obviously he had his career. I mean, he played in the big leagues. I think he had already 20 years in the big leagues when he got to, when he got here to Texas. And so we all knew Nolan, he was already a Hall of Famer. He already done his career, but you know, the things that he was able to accomplish after he got here was unbelievable, with the no hitters and even the one hitters. He had about 6 or 7 or 8 one hitters when he was here. You know, the 5,000 strikeout, the 300th win. So we were able to share in all of those things. But as far as his demeanor, he set the tone early on in every game that he pitched. He was going to go after one of their hitters early on, and we knew that we were going to either get into a fight or one of us was going to get hit. And so I remember specifically a game that we played in 89 against the Boston Red Sox, and it was Nolan Ryan against Roger Clemens. First inning, Ellis Burks got hit in the head by Nolan. And I knew that hitting third, I was the guy that was going to get thrown at. Mm. And, yeah, it happened. In the first inning, he threw right at me and missed my head. But luckily I didn't get hit. But that's the kind of stuff that was going on back then, you know. He intimidated the opposing team, and no one really charged them out on him.
Well, because the one time they did, it didn't work out super awesome for them. So I could see that. Still to
it
this,
it didn't work out. That's correct.
Still to this day, I have the 5,000 strikeout pin I got because if you sent in your ticket stub from that game to the Texas Rangers, they were sending out that pin. I still have that from his 5,000 strikeout to this day.
Good. I've got some stuff that I have from those all those games that we played together. I just don't know what it is. I mean, it was so many things anyway. But yeah, it was actually fun to play with him.
Well, if you want me to come by your house and sort through your memorabilia, I would be glad to do that for you.
It's all in my game room, man. I don't usually go in there these days, but it's all up in there.
Rafi, I want to talk about your swing because you had one of the easiest swing that just generated, you know, a lot of extra base hits, a lot of home runs, and other guys that have great numbers, hey, they did it, but their swing just didn't look as easy as yours. Can you talk about your swing and just how smooth it was and it still generated a lot of pop?
Well, I was focused on my hands more than anything. You know, I think as a kid, my dad kind of taught me that I needed to swing with my just use my hands with the swing, and so, which is good in a way. But I had to learn how to hit with my lower half later on when I got to the big league. So, but as far as the smoothness of my swing, I mean, I tried to swing the bat hard, but I just wasn't a big strong guy. I had to rely on my bat speed and my hands. So that's how I learned how to hit. You know, later on, I was able to incorporate my lower half and was able to drive the ball out of the park. But yeah, I wasn't trying to just be smooth. I was trying to hit the ball hard.
We talked a lot about like earlier parts of your career. Was it just, I'm sure it's just business decisions. Was it tough to leave the Rangers and was it easy to come back? Because obviously you went to Baltimore and then you came back. What were those situations like that had you sign elsewhere and then decide to come back?
Well, it wasn't really my choice to leave, and that's another thing that I kind of had to learn to deal with because it was my first time as a free agent, and I wanted to stay here in Texas. I mean, this is a great place to play, and being here for 5 years, you just want to settle in and you want to establish yourself, and, you know, the Rangers wanted to go in a different direction, so instead of, you know, signing me, they went out and signed Will Clark, which is, you know, he was a great player. I didn't understand at the time how the whole thing worked out, so I came out and said a few things that I shouldn't have said. But, you know, leaving here was hard. I didn't want to leave. But coming back here, that was easy. Coming back here after 5 years in Baltimore, even though we had some really good years in Baltimore and had a chance to play in some championship series, I just wanted to come back and play with my home team, which was the Rangers. And so I was able to do that.
So you speak about Baltimore. Now, I want to go, Rafi, to 1994 because you're having a great year. I have it pulled up here. You're batting .319, 23 homers, 76 RBIs, and the season stops. And right now we're not in the middle of a season, but right now the players are getting, I don't want to say crushed, but you kind of know what you went through it in 1994. The players right now are trying to stand up for some of their rights, and it just doesn't look good in the media. Can you talk about how tough it is as a player? Because you went through it in the prime of your career. You stopped a season. How tough it is as a player to love a sport that much, but yet to say, hey, we just can't play it under these circumstances.
Well, it is really tough. I mean, I know people kind of blame the players for, you know, the strike or wanting to hold the line. But it is tough for us because we love the game and we want to play. And it's not just about the money. It's about all the things and all the sacrifices that were made by previous players, guys that went through it that had to sacrifice, and the things that they were able to earn, you know, from free agency to arbitration and all the other things that they have sacrificed and fought for. You know, you want to stand for that. You don't want to just go out and say, okay, we just want to go play and forget what's happened in the past. And so that kind of was the thing that we were taught, you know, as far as myself is concerned, as a young player, you don't want to tear that up. You want to maintain that, and you also want to maintain it for the future generations to come out. Now, this situation that's going on is different because this was not bargaining, you know, this was not the players' whatever bargaining agreement that was up. This is due to the coronavirus, and so it's a little bit different, but you still have to be able to, you know, do something that's fair for both sides. And so I really haven't been following it that much, so I'm not even sure where they stand. But I think it's time to get back, man. I think it's time to get back to playing baseball. I think people need it. People need that that outlet. You know, we all want to go back to that new stadium. And it's time to get back.
You've given us like such insightful and thoughtful answers, which I really appreciate. I'm curious how much you look back at your career or think about the frustrations or anything like that in terms of, like, to me, it's the Hall of Fame voting. Did you get to a point where you're just like, this is just how it's going to be? Or does it still bother you? Because, like, the numbers say you should be in.
Well, I mean, it still bothers me some, but I've kind of gotten over that. There's nothing that I can do about it. I can't control it. So the only thing that I was able to control was, you know, what I did, my career. And the unfortunate thing that happened to me at the end that kind of ruined everything that I had done and then ruined my chances of, you know, being a Hall of Famer. But, you know, I'm over that. There's nothing that I can do. I think I still have one more shot at it coming up at some point, but I'm not getting my hopes up. I'm not holding my breath. You know, I think I had a pretty good career. You know, I gave everything I had to the game. I wasn't the best player. I didn't have the most talent, but I came out and I played every day. Whether I was hurt or sick or good or bad, I did everything that I could to help my team win. And so, you know, obviously what happened to me at the end, you know, took all that away, and the vote was just never there. So it is what it is.
When that next chance comes around, do you feel like you have to, like, lobby or talk to people, or are you just like, look, I'm either a Hall of Famer or I'm not? Like, what's your take on that?
You know, people want me to lobby for that, but I'm not going to do that. There's no lobbying on my part. I'm either a Hall of Famer or not. You know, there's a lot of guys that are more deserving of me that are not in the Hall of Fame, like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and McGuire and Sosa and all those guys. So I don't know that any of them are lobbying for that. Maybe they are, but I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. It is what it is, and I would love to be in the Hall of Fame and be part of that history. I have a lot of respect for the guys that are in there and for the institution itself. But if I'm not a part of it, you know, life goes on, and hopefully the rest of my life will be better than, you know, what I've done in the past.
Raffy, last thing, I was so impressed with how you could hit last year. How much work did it take? Because, I mean, I was, you know, just seeing kind of the highlights and stuff like that from you playing last year independent ball in Cleburne and still being able to have that sweet swing and hit the ball like you did. How much time and effort did you have to put into being that good of a hitter again?
Well, you know, I really never quit completely because I have two boys that were playing, and so we practiced all the time, and I was either hitting fungos or I was in the cages with them taking swings. So I never completely quit where I just kind of dropped everything and never worked out. So I was still swinging the bat. And so when I decided to come back and play for Cleburne, I started in December, I guess, and I swung the bat three or four times a week until the beginning of the season in May. And I honestly felt like I hadn't quit playing ball. That's how easy it felt for me now. I wasn't facing big league pitching. I was facing guys that were, you know, A-ball, double-A, triple-A guys. But I never felt overmatched. And if I hadn't have gotten hurt where I tore my meniscus in my left knee, I would have dominated that league. I honestly would have. I mean, I just felt like I was playing with kids.
Well, we were so glad to have you on the show. The 30 for 30 Long Gone Summer will be on Sunday night, so we might need to bring you back on to get a review of that thing, man.
I'd like to get back with you guys after I watch it. I didn't even know it was going to be on.
Yeah, we're breaking news for you. Sunday night, ESPN.
Good.
Check
I'm
it out.
Watch it, man. Yeah, I mean, I know those two guys very well, and I have a lot of respect for what they did with the game. And, you know, the game was teetering on extinction there when we went through that stuff with the lockout and the strike. But they brought it back, man, and I'm glad that I was part of, you know, that time frame in baseball's history.
Well, thank you very much again for jumping on. We appreciate you, man.
You got it, man. Thanks again. Appreciate that.
Rafael awesome. Palmeiro, Texas Rangers icon. For real, Bassick, I thought he was doing a bit at the beginning when he goes, what is that? Like, I thought he was being sarcastic, yeah. but apparently he was not. I feel like yeah. we helped.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.